Welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Higgy Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. To support the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast and find extra material, please go to patreon.com/themodernfairysightingspodcast. Thanks. Welcome to the Winter Solstice 2020 edition of the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast. This episode is a little longer than usual. Our guest shares two sightings with us, and I have to say that the second sighting is one of the most tremendous experiences I've heard to date. It took place in winter, around this time of year when it grows dark in the early evening. The time when we move towards the solstice, the shortest day, and in doing so, we welcome and celebrate the return of the light. And that's very fitting, as both of these experiences involve beautiful and mysterious light shows. I'm particularly interested in the second described encounter because I recognise it, and know of two other groups of people who have witnessed and encountered these elsewhere in the world. I'd love to hear from you if you've experienced something similar. This episode includes a bit more chat. We talk about the experience of lockdown and how it seems to have shifted some people's relationship with nature, and how nature has offered solace in these difficult and unpredictable times. We touch on how the increase of fairy sightings somehow feels linked to a transitional move in global consciousness. And we also discuss whether these sorts of experiences help people connect with themselves again, somehow removing limitations and encouraging that person to return to who they really are. I hope you enjoyed tonight's episode. I'd love to hear how you're enjoying the show on Twitter @_remain_curious. You can also access show notes and contact me at www.scarletofthefae.com. Please note, as ever, that this podcast isn't suitable for children. We began by discussing the taboo around fairy sightings.
I've not really found much of a taboo attached to it. Maybe it's just the people I associate with, but most of the people that I've talked to about it are quite open to, you know, hearing about it. And even if they don't believe it themselves, they're just interested. I have got a couple of friends who are, you know, dead against it, so that's absolutely rubbish. But, you know, there's always going to be some of them, isn't there?
Yeah. That's really good, because, I mean, a lot of people say that if they've gone through some kind of experience, they don't have anybody to talk to about it. There are lots of people out there who just would have an encounter and then just not know what to do with that. So tell me about what happened with you. What was your experience with this?
Well, I've had two separate experiences, really. I'm not much of a storyteller, though, so you'll have to bear with me.
That's fine.
So the first experience, I lived in this an old market town, medieval market town. Mm-hmm. It's really, really pretty area. We lived down one of the nicest streets. It was a big pasture land that used to be once forest, but was all cut down to clear it fields. So you know, it's, I suppose you could think that it would be a place of a lot of energy. Having all that forest cut down, there's actually a little part remaining, and it's one of the oldest woodland in the area. It's an absolutely gorgeous bit of woodland, but it's so small. And just to imagine what the whole of the wood would have been like back then, you know, you'd have to go to see it. But it's the stereotypical oak woodland with moss growing up the trees, and you know what you see in kind of fairy tales, if you like. The first encounter I had was actually in the house. We lived in a Victorian, early Victorian terraced house. And this is when I was living with my dad. And I had a little tiny bedroom. And I was basically just laid in bed. And I was feeling a little bit restless. And I have a tendency, because I'm a little bit nuts, I keep the window open all of the time. Even through winter, like I've got my window open now. I just like fresh air. I'm very outdoorsy. So I was sat in bed anyway, feeling a bit restless, just thinking about things. And I was laid on my side, and I turned over and laid on my back. And I wasn't tired. I was dead awake. And I hadn't slept before. So a lot of people say, "Oh, you could be daydreaming and stuff," but I definitely wasn't. I know for a fact I wasn't. And you know when you're awake and when you're not, don't you?
Yeah.
And I looked up at the ceiling of my bedroom, and there was this light. And how I can describe it was, a solid circle of light, like a torchlight. And it had seven smaller lights around the outside. And I thought, well, what's that? Is that a reflection of something? And I was looking around, I was thinking, there's no light. You know, my bedroom's pitch black. There's not no electrical appliances in there or anything. And I was a bit baffled by it. So I went to take a closer look. I went and sat up. And these smaller lights around this larger central light started spinning around it.
Oh my goodness.
I thought, that's really weird. And I was like, what's going on? So then I got up. I wasn't scared or anything. I was just intrigued. And I got up and I moved closer to it. And this light shot off into the corner of my bedroom above my door. It was stood in this, on the ceiling in the corner of my room. And it was just hovering there. And so I got up and I went closer to it again. And then it shot to the other side of my bedroom. And then I went closer to it again and it disappeared out of the window. But that's what is that? Is it a fairy? Is it an alien? You know, I'm not sure what it was, but I think it looks to me what I've seen in like fantasy books as like a will-o'-wisp.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's what I thought it might have been.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, I was 21, so I wasn't right. Young. This was 2D as well. It was just like flat on the ceiling. It was like a torchlight, like there's just a light there.
Mm.
It wasn't actually like an orb, you know, it wasn't a sphere. It was just circles on the ceiling. I've seen orbs before. I've seen one of them in this, it was in a graveyard. This thing in my room, it was just like it was flat. It did just look like a light, you know, it looked like... you know, like if you've got a computer on and there's a really bright light and it just shows up on a wall or on the ceiling, it just sort of looked like that. But then it reacted to me and that made me think, this isn't an electrical appliance.
No. Did you get any feeling from it at all?
Just a lot of intrigue. I wasn't scared. No, I suppose I didn't get anything really, because I did just think it was a light. And I was just intrigued to what it was, and I got closer, and then it moved, and I thought, "Oh, this is really interesting." I was just trying to get a closer look to it, but it wouldn't let me near it.
Yeah. Did you have any kind of like great transitions in your life around that time, or just afterwards?
Well, there was two things that happened, one shortly after the other. The first thing was I went on a sailing trip. I sailed to Brazil on a two-man yacht.
Oh my goodness, that sounds incredible.
It was an incredible experience.
How did that come about? That's a really amazing thing to do.
Well, so my granddad passed away. He left me £1,000. And I was just thinking at the time, I didn't have a job or anything. I just left university and I was struggling to find work. And I was a bit down in the dumps and I wanted to do something with my life. And I was walking there with my mum and we saw in the field at the other side that there was a boat just laid derelict in the field. So I decided to find out who owned this boat because it was absolutely gorgeous, and I thought, you know, I could really turn that into something.
Yeah.
So I found out who owned it, and I'm actually a qualified joiner and 3D designer. I've got the relevant skills to basically do up this yacht. I found the yacht, found the owners, and I took the yacht and did it up and got it on the water, got it going and everything. But it was a freshwater sailor.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I want to learn how to sail now because I've got this yacht. I don't know how to sail, but you know, I want to learn how to sail it. So I joined this this website, a bit like Facebook for people who are interested in boats. And I just basically put my details up then, and I sort of wrote a bit of a job advertisement saying I'd like to get some experience sailing. So after a little while, this guy got in touch with me, and he says, I'm spending my retirement just sailing around the world, visiting these beautiful places. And he said, but the problem is I want to get across to America now. And it's one of the most dangerous passes known to man, you know, on a small boat. And the problem is I need someone strong enough to, you know, raise the sails and be able to help me on the voyage.
Yeah.
And he just basically said, are you crazy enough? I'll teach you everything.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I met this guy at the pub.
Yeah.
For a drink, and then that was it. Next time I was seeing him, I was seeing him in Tenerife, and we were sailing from Tenerife to Brazil via Madeira and all these beautiful islands in between. So,
oh, incredible. That is such an amazing adventure. So,
it was. I miss it, though.
Yeah, well, do it again. You're only young.
Yeah, that's true. It's getting the time off work these days, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that sounds great. So that wasn't too long after this then?
Maybe 6 months or something in between.
Blimey, because that's kind of, yeah, that's a really kind of landmark thing to be doing in your life, especially at that age.
Well, it is, yeah. So maybe this whatever it was, maybe it did have an effect on me, and just thought, you know, sod it, just go and do something crazy.
Yeah,
I've never made the connection to that light. I mean, it's funny you said that.
To be honest, I mean, when I speak to people and ask them this, that is often what happens. They have a think and they go, "Oh yeah, something really kind of life changing happened not too long after that," and I mean, you know, I don't have any of the answers, but, you know, from speaking to people, it seems like this connection with whatever we're connecting with, I don't know if it's, some people might say the all, you know, as in if we are all one and we all come from the same place, and then this light comes to us, or, you know, this being comes to us, or we have some kind of experience where we connect with other, somehow we're connecting with all. And in doing that, that we reconnect with ourselves again in some way. And it just kind of removes any blocks or any perceptions of limitations, or, you know, almost like receiving a blessing of some sort. So, it would be lovely to think that that did bring a blessing, and I guess we'll never know. But it's, as I say, I do find it interesting that these things happen after those sorts of experiences. And you mentioned that there was there one in a woods as well, did you say?
Yeah, there was. Yeah. So this is a completely different one. And this, I suppose, was a different experience. I'll explain it to you and see what you think. So, you know, I mentioned earlier the wood. So at the end of the road that I lived on, as you walked up, there's a small area of woodland on the right-hand side. And this is down in a dip. This area wasn't cleared. for the farmland because it was too bad terrain. You know, it's moundy and it was in a big ditch, and they never cleared that. So this was some of this ancient woodland that was left. Anyway, I was with my friend, and we decided we wanted to go for a walk. This was in winter, so it was pretty dark. It was I'll say night time. It wasn't night time. It was probably about 7 o'clock, something like that. But it was like this time of year, yeah, where it's dark at that time. Mm. And we went for a walk on the wood anyway. And as we were walking around these woods, we saw some lights down below in the trees, and we thought, "Oh, what's that? Is it just some kids having a drink and, you know, got torches on and stuff?" And we just sort of stopped to have a look, like you would. And we just stood talking about what we were talking about, and watching these lights just going through the woods. And we thought, that's a little bit strange how the lights moving, because it was like moving like somebody had the torch in the hand, but it wasn't actually emitting a beam of light. It was just like a ball of light.
Mm.
And we noticed then there was two of them, and they were like alternating. We thought, well, this is really strange. So we kind of went and sat on the edge of the it's like a cliff. I call it a cliff. It's not quite a cliff, but a very steep hill.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just watching these lights, and again out of intrigue really. And these lights drew closer and closer, and my friend started getting a bit worried. He was like, this is a bit strange, you know, they don't look like torches, you know, it could be some crazy guy out there doing something weird. So he was getting a little bit unsettled, and I said, just hang on, you know, we're not far from the town, and we're fully grown guys, you know, we can look after ourselves. And eventually these lights went out into an opening, and the moon was out, and the whole of the woodland was lit up by this moonlight. And we noticed in the opening, it was the only way I can describe it. I mean, this is one that I don't like telling people normally because of the connotations attached to it, and people think you're mad, don't they? But what came out into this light, it was like a person, but what I can describe it as was it had really long legs, a really small torso, and long spindly fingers, and like long spindly sticky sort of hair. It's like the sort of thing that it sounds daft, but you know Lord of the Rings, the Ents in Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
But person sized and really skinny, and like really long legs, and it had lights in its hands. These lights were in its hands.
Wow.
Like in the palm of its hands. And
yeah.
I said to my friend, he says, "What the hell is that? That is not a person." He says, "Oh, I'm going." And he just legged it. He ran off. And I stayed there and watched it because I was just fascinated. And it sort of stopped. And I don't know if it was looking at me or looking away, because it was just a silhouette. Couldn't see the whole thing. But it stood there, and then it ran off, but it ran really quick in the woodland afterwards, and we lost it after that. But after this, I did a little bit of research, and I thought, well, I wonder if there's any folklore. And, and to my amazement, I found there's absolutely loads of folktales, with it being an old medieval town. There's some great ones there. But none of them described him as having this long, spindly hair and long fingers.
Mm.
I used to be a bit of an artist, not a very good one, but I actually drew a picture of it. So.
Oh, amazing. Oh, I'd love to see that.
I'll see if I can dig it out for you. I've definitely got it somewhere.
Thank you. That's incredible. Can you tell me about how it ran?
It's really long strides. So it's sort of like, you know, if you see like someone like Usain Bolt, like a a really good sprinter, someone with really long strides. It was like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a stamper. It had really long legs and it, you know, it's massive strides.
Welcome to the Alchemy of Natural Healing. I'm your host, Laurel Dewey. True healing is an alchemical process, meaning it must transform you on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. What affects one affects all three. True healing is one of the hardest journeys you'll ever travel, but it's one of the most rewarding and fulfilling when you get to meet yourself for the first time. If you're ready to take that journey, let's get started.
And did it move any of the rest of its body while it was running?
Like its arms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of had its arms behind it, which, thinking about it, is a little bit strange. It didn't move its arms. It just sort of had them hanging.
Mm.
It sounds a little bit weird, to be honest with you.
No, it's really important, I think, because it would be wonderful to know if anyone else had seen anything like that. Could you describe again its hair? When you say it was sticky, in what way do you mean that? Could you see it in the light? Is that what made it sticky?
I should say here that I realised afterwards what my guest meant was sticks for hair rather than it being sticky to touch. It was his hair was made of sticks.
It was like, I don't know what's a good description of it, actually, which it's probably going to sound daft, but you know Groot off Marvel?
I'm afraid I don't. I will have to.
it's like a tree man in that, but it's like, the thing that I saw was like that, apart from his head's a lot bigger and like rounded. I remember its head being quite big in comparison to its body.
Mm. I'm just going to look that up now. Okay. Yeah, but a lot skinnier.
Yeah,
right?
Like a really skinny body.
Because this is quite chunky.
Body.
Yeah.
Really skinny body, but a bigger head than Groot as well.
Mm.
And it was more rounded, like a more rounded head. Like he's got quite a square head, hasn't he?
Mm. Yeah. And so, but it was a human size.
Yeah, it's a human size. I mean, it's difficult to get a proportionate distance, but it certainly wasn't small and it certainly wasn't massive. You know, it was around about the same size as a human, I'd say.
And did it have facial features?
Well, I couldn't see the facial features because it was, you know, in the moonlight and there was a silhouette. I mean, I've kind of, in my drawing, I've drawn what I believed it to look like. But, you know, it's very loose. That the only thing that was solid is kind of the silhouette in my drawing.
Mm-hmm. But no kind of nose or anything silhouetted in the light?
No. Okay. I definitely don't think it had a nose. It was like... its face was pretty sort of plain, really. As I say, I mean, you can tell if when you look at someone's face in the moonlight, you can see where all the dips and hollows are, can't you? You can see the shadows and stuff. And this thing didn't really have many dips and hollows. It was odd. It was like almost like its face was like the smoothest part of its body. Mm. And the rest of it was all sort of like... Well, like bark, really. It did just look like a tree man.
Yeah, yeah. And you said that the arms, or was it the hands, were quite spindly?
Yes, I had really long fingers, like really long sort of branchy fingers. Sort of like, you know, the Grinch. Have you seen the film The Grinch?
Yeah.
Like his fingers, you know, he's got really, really long fingers.
Mm.
He was sort of like that. And his arms was really long as well.
And I love that he was rolling these orbs of light in his hands.
Yeah, that's what drew our attention to it. I mean, you know, we wouldn't have looked otherwise. We would have never seen him.
Do you think so? I'm imagining you were sort of sitting up further on the cliff bit and looking down on him, assuming it was a he. And I guess in the moonlight, and was it a full moon or?
Yeah, it was a full moon.
I guess he would have been aware of your presence as well.
Well, it seemed like he was because, as I say, he was moving towards us at first when we just saw the lights, but then he sort of moved backwards, like he'd kind of already seen us.
Yeah.
He sort of moved backwards and then moved out into this opening that's in between, because it's like wooded all the way around this area, and then there's an opening in between that's like meadowland.
Right.
He like moved into there. It's like he sort of spotted us before we realised what he was.
Yeah.
And then it moved over, and then he stopped in this light. I mean, that's what I think is the strangest thing. Like, these things that are so secretive, you know, why would he just stop in the light and look at us? You know, you would have thought these secretive beings would, you know, be a lot better at hiding themselves, basically.
I guess maybe not to everybody. I mean, obviously, you guys weren't there with good intentions, and if one being can connect with another being, I mean, as humans, we generally get like a kind of, it's not always so accurate, but a lot of the time, I think we get a good idea of people, even if we walk past them, we've never met them before, like a kind of, almost like a kind of animalistic awareness of people. So maybe these kind of beings actually have a better sense, extra sense, and if so, then maybe it felt okay showing itself while you were there, and or maybe for some reason you saw it whereas other people didn't. Were you quite familiar with this place that you were walking in?
Yeah, very familiar. I used to play there when I was a little kid and everything. So, yeah. I mean, it's funny you should say that about that intuition, like personal intuition. Because, you know, this thing seems to be related to nature.
Yeah.
And I've always felt more at one with nature than I am with people, which I know sounds a little bit deep, but you know, I feel more at home in a forest than I do in a city.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I think when you're at one with nature like that, you are really disconnecting with nature itself. And you know, it sounds like these beings, this being, is a part of nature.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to think. I see them as nature spirits.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it obviously didn't mean any harm, but what, you know, what a beautiful light show, and then just really allowing you to see it as well. It's just amazing. Did you get any particular feeling in your body at the time?
Well, to be honest with this, I felt like I wanted to follow it, you know, go and join him in his world, his or her world, you know what I mean? It sounds crazy to some people, but I'd love to just, you know, be that person to live at one with fate, you know what I mean? As I say, I've always had that connection. I'd be quite happy just living in a cabin in the woods, or, you know, not even a cabin, inside a tree, you know?
I think a lot of people feel like that. You know, you're definitely not alone in that. I think, especially at the moment, these recent years where the world is going slightly bonkers in front of our eyes, and actually, you know, then we turn to nature and everything's still continuing as it always was and always will do, probably long after us humans are no longer here. And it really does feel like a very grounding, well, it's just a way to ground and connect, isn't it? And to feel better again, actually, to be in nature. That's kind of where our hearts lie, really, isn't it? And I just think a lot of people have just become so removed from that. But there are many of us who do feel that connection still.
Well, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it always amazes me when, like, you're going to the countryside, like, as you will probably know, you live in the city, you walk past people, and no one will say hello, or, you know, most people tend to sort of avoid contact, won't they? But when you go into the countryside, everyone says hello, and everyone's really friendly, and everyone seems happy, don't they?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Just thinking about this experience again, so when did you say that happened?
I suppose, I think it was in between my sailing trip and moving down south. So I think it must have been 22, 23, something like that.
Right. So it was after you saw the lights at home as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
The next big thing that happened then was moving away from home. Right.
It was, yeah.
And did you feel any different after that happened? What did you take from it?
I think from there, that's when I really got a huge interest in that kind of thing, you know, in fae and stuff, looking into it a bit more. It fueled my interest, if you know what I mean. I've always had an interest in it, but that really fueled it. And I started looking into it more. I started reading up sagas and learning about folklore. That's all I can say, really. It just gave me more of an interest.
Yeah. And how did it end that night? What happened? I mean, so you saw him in the moonlight in the kind of open space of that field, and then what happened?
Well, when he disappeared, I just walked back to my house, which was only a quarter of a mile away, not very far at all.
And
first thing I did is tell my dad, so, you know, I couldn't believe it.
Great.
And,
I
rang up my friend that I said who ran away. I just said to him, you know, that was pretty incredible. I don't know why you ran away. I was just completely, you know, entranced by just seeing something like that.
Yeah. Was he really shaken up? Or?
Yeah, he was shaken up. He was the complete opposite to me. I tend to be fairly open about these things. It's like I've seen what I believe to be ghosts and stuff. You know, I'm the same, really. I've not really had any scary experiences. I've just been more intrigued and fascinated than scared. I don't think there's any reason to be scared of things like this. You know, the fear, just natural beings, just like you and I, and like any animal on this planet. And you know, spirits are just people that have passed on. You know, there's only something to be worried about if, you know, they're a complete nutcase, just met a normal person in the real world.
I can sympathise with sort of being in a sort of dark forest at night and then seeing something. Although the thing is with these things is that the people that I've spoken to that have had these experiences, they don't seem to relay being frightened. I mean, okay, if they've had a really terrible experience, and some people do have really scary experiences and it's just awful, then of course they're absolutely terrified. But where it's just an encounter like this, where they've come face to face with a fairy, there isn't fear. Fear isn't a factor.
No, I mean, they're just beings like us, aren't they? They're not out to hurt people. It's, yeah, I just see them as, again, as individuals. I think their nature varies as much as our own does.
Yeah, and I guess you didn't sense anything, you know, frightening about or threatening about this being.
No, not at all, no.
No. And what did your dad say?
My dad was, like, just completely flabbergasted, but my dad's seen similar things as well. So he's, he did believe me. It wasn't a case of, oh, you're talking rubbish. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I suppose I had that that support from my family again. Maybe that's down to my Scottish heritage and these things being passed on.
Yeah, I'd say that's the same with my dad and his Irish heritage. And I think if you're brought up being open to the idea that there is this other world, then maybe in some way you're prepared for it as well if it happens.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the fear comes, you know, a lot of people get scared of these things, are unprepared, like you say, and they maybe believe in something that has absolutely no relevance to it.
Yeah.
You know, it challenges everything that their life has been built up on. Like, say, for example, if they were brought up in a Christian family, they wouldn't believe in fear, would they? So, you know, something like that challenges their very ideals and their very belief system. And it's just from one little event.
Although there are plenty of accounts of fairies turning up in, you know, vicarages and to reverends' wives. And then, of course, you've got Irish Catholicism. Plenty of Irish Catholics do believe in fae, but then they have a fear of them as well. So I wonder how much of that fear is brought through the Catholic faith. It's hard to say. There's definitely a reverence and a, you know, a taboo about talking about them, but it sounds like you've got such a lovely connection with nature. Have you been back there since?
Yeah, I've been back a few times since, yeah.
Do you ever try to connect with that being or kind of say hello to it in some way?
No, I haven't. I wouldn't know how to, really. I did do with the light that I saw in my room. I did with that.
So oh, yeah.
I read up on it, and it was the stuff that I read up was saying that fae like honey, and I put some honey out on my mantelpiece on my bedroom, and I just left a note saying, live in peace, basically. You're as welcome here as I am, basically.
Yeah, that's great. And that's the thing, it's more about it coming from the heart, like just even to take the time to look up to see what it is that you could offer, and then to give something and love, and to write a note like that, you know, a loving kind of open note like that. That's a real beautiful offering. And that is magic at its core, isn't it? To open your heart to the unknown, and it's an honouring, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think I'm a pretty open person. You know, anything like that. I don't disbelieve anything. You know, I'd like to keep my mind open, because I know there's so much we don't know about this planet, and you know, there's so much that's been lost as well in knowledge. And I think that's why I associate myself more in the older beliefs, because I think the further back you go, the more connected we are with the planet.
Yeah.
I think as we've progressed as a species, we've moved away from, you know, the planet that we once knew. You know, we've relied now on technology and living inside, you know, stone buildings instead of, you know, in a forest at one with nature.
It's true. And part of the lockdown meant that people seemed to turn back to nature again, you know, going out for walks. They really found that brought them a level of well-being that they couldn't get in any other way, and you know, just really yearning for that connection with nature. It's I think it's been quite apparent that it switched a lot of people on to nature this year.
Definitely. I mean, I've got friends who used to hate going out for walks and, you know, going into the countryside, and they're the opposite now. You know, they actually want to go and do it, and enjoy it. It's really strange.
That feels, I'm so glad to hear that. That is really comforting to know that that's the direction we're going in. I do feel that, you know, and it has been just such a weird time, but it's almost like, you know, we're kind of in like a liminal state at the moment. And I do feel like we're going through a great time of transition, and all of the madness that's going on at the moment is part of that transition. And, you know, polarized nature of politics and all of that, I just feel like it's sort of an axis shift that's happening, and the tip is going towards better times, but we're still kind of wrangling with the old world, well, the old world since industrial times anyway. And I just hope that we're tipping back into something that's more healthy. And I do feel like that there have been so many more people coming forth with sightings that want to talk about them as well, and that they want to share them with the world. And I feel like it's time that people maybe are starting to get ready to get their heads around that. That I had a friend who said that when we have moved from solar plexus, which as a global consciousness, he said that we were kind of in a solar plexus energy, the big I am sort of energy. This is mine. I own this. I'm bigger than you. You're less than me. And moving towards heart consciousness, which is what nature is based in. So we are all one. We are all free. I'm you. You are me. We are one. That kind of vibration. If that's what we're moving towards, he said, once we've moved away from the solar plexus and we have stopped being so up ourselves as a, you know, we are the human race and we're the most, more important than everyone, including nature. Once we've got over ourselves a bit, we might actually be at a point where we can start to understand that we are not the only life beings either. So, you know, that there are other worlds without and within. So we've got worlds within nature and also worlds in outer space as well. So he's no longer with us, but he wrote this book and I was reading it a few months ago, and I'd never actually noticed that part in it before. And I was like, wow, yeah, I do believe that's what's happening now, that we're kind of preparing for that. So I mean, who knows, but I feel like something's happening.
I hope you're right, because I think it sounds grim, but you know, I think that our race definitely needs a wake-up call.
It really does.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just as bad as everyone else myself, but, you know, I think we need something to just open our eyes and, you know, make us see outside of our, you know, like you say, what did he call it? Our solar plexus, our own existence and nothing else.
Yeah, I know. Thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed listening to your story. It's left me with lots of visuals.
Well, same to you too. You know, it was really nice to see that you got in touch with us, and, you know, it's nice, like you say, just talking to someone about these things.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode share. It sounded like an absolutely wonderful experience. Like I mentioned, these stick beings or tree beings are familiar to me, and I wonder if any of you have seen anything similar. Apart from the TV character Stickman, I hadn't heard much about them until a few years ago. I'll be talking to another guest at a later date who had an encounter with a tree man. I do find it interesting that all three sightings of this type of being have been witnessed by two or more people who've been present at the time. Links to images of Groot, the Ents, and the picture that our guest drew are available on the show notes at www.scarletofthefae.com. Although we began this episode by our guest talking about the lack of taboo around the subject, he did later note that he didn't usually like talking about the second encounter in the woods, as people usually think you're mad. It's interesting that the light show in the bedroom, which sounds similar to UFO experiences, felt easier for him to discuss. But when it comes to fairy or nature beings, there's a hesitancy to mention it. There's a real feeling that it's a step too far for most people to comprehend. I hope that this podcast challenges those ideas because, for many people, while it's inexplicable, it's simply something that happened in their lives. Not a vision or hallucination, but an unusual occurrence that they'll never forget. I love that his family were the sort that simply supported him and were interested in his experience. And I totally sympathise with his friend running off. We've all seen the films and the recent TV series like Stranger Things, where we're willing the characters to run off at the first sign of something emerging from the unknown. But the interesting thing is that during these real encounters, people don't generally report feeling afraid. In fact, quite the opposite. They describe feelings of peace and happiness, or the sense that it's just natural to witness. Our guest makes the point that he feels there's nothing to be afraid of, and that the nature of these beings varies as much as the nature of human beings. He tells us that during the experience he felt the urge to go and join this being in their other world. This pull towards the other world is a feature of some encounters, and is also described throughout fairy folklore as being pixie-led, led astray by the fairies. As well as this, there's plenty of folklore concerning humans being taken away by the fairies to be lovers, slaves, wet nurses and midwives, or simply just because they stepped into fairy territory. There are links for further reading on my show notes. I spoke about the sense of current global transition that many are experiencing, and the book I referenced was Martin Brofman's Anything Can Be Healed. Well, I hope you enjoyed this longer episode, and if you are enjoying the podcast, please share it with one other person who might also appreciate it. Solstice blessings to you, and I hope you receive some sense of the light returning to your lives. Much love, and always remain curious.